I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Introducing the all-new Mariposa Omar Rodriguez Lopez signature model electric guitar from Ernie Ball Music Man. The latest designed from the ground-up signature model in a long list of unique and often groundbreaking artist instruments. Unlike most other brand signature releases, Music Man team up with each artist to design every single element of their instrument. From the body shape to the pickups, controls, and construction type, each new addition to the Music Man signature series is as individual as the player they work with. And the Mariposa is no exception. Featuring an offset angular Akume body shape, providing a beautiful, unique appearance whilst retaining maximum balance and playing comfort. Gorgeous custom pickguard designs, laser etched with an original ornate floral design and coordinated to complement each specific finish option. And unique and versatile dual volume pots to create a natural variation in the high end when set at different levels. Available in Imperial Black, Imperial White, Dorado Green, and of course, Pueblo Pink. Check them out in the description of this podcast or at music-man.com. Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by a full house of Guitar Nerds hosts. I've got Mark Packham. I've got Jay Cross.
Hi, Joe.
And I've got Matthew Knight.
Can you shoot a ghost?
That's a question many, many have asked. Anyway, so we are back. Mark Packham is spitting his water all over the floor. It's fine.
You got Mark just as he took a mouthful of water.
That was good. That was,
and honestly, then he splurted it out in front of his computer.
Phil Milhouse.
You almost just cost me a laptop there, Matty.
Can you shoot a ghost?
I googled that exact phrase, and a news story came out from last year where a man was charged for shooting at a ghost.
The reason that came up is that we did the second live Guitar Nerds episode this week, and provisionally
It hasn't come out yet.
No, it'll be out on Friday, but yeah. The people who are on Patreon will have heard it if they listen live. The provisional topic, because we didn't really have much else to talk about, was, have you ever seen a ghost? And I've never experienced Joe Branton so angry.
He's so annoyed.
That we had gone off topic, because he wasn't in control of the podcast. It was just me and Jay. And he was furious that the topic we had chosen was...
You can't do ghosts because people like to listen to us talk about boutique amps that nobody has heard about. Why don't you talk about those?
I do really like talking about guitars on the guitar podcast
but
we do.
Also, have you ever seen a ghost?
I'm split on that one because I love Patrick Swayze more than anything else.
You've seen the movie Ghost, but have you ever seen a ghost?
Well, I've seen Patrick Swayze in the movie Ghost.
All right, calm down. I'm spoilers.
No spoilers for the podcast either. But it was actually a really good one.
I enjoyed it.
And,
I enjoyed myself.
Thanks to everyone that joined in. Just another shout out for Patreon. Really, like, if you want to, we're doing a bunch of cool stuff. We're doing obviously the live things. Which you can join in on from the $1 tier. You can listen to the podcast live as we do it. Submit questions. You can talk on the podcast if you want. You can be part of it.
You can ask us questions about guitars or about supernatural
encounters.
Preferably supernatural encounters.
No.
Pretty much every other Sunday at 8 o'clock UK time, we're going to be doing Guitar Nerds live.
Unless we've got
something else going on, which we did when we had the London Guitar Show. But as a kind of consequence of that, we've also started another series which gets released on Fridays only on Patreon
The question hole, which question it has been hole. Pointed out, we missed a wonderful opportunity.
Did. It was suggested we call it the ask hole, but
there's still time.
No, I think we need to maybe keep it as the question hole. Well, basically, we got a whole bunch of questions when I asked for them on Facebook.
I like it being the question hole because there's the sort of subtle suggestion of the ask hole without it being just a full ask hole.
Yeah. You just a glimpse into the ask hole, but it's the question hole.
It's the question hole.
Just don't look directly at it.
No.
I'm not sure that this is PG-13.
Anyway, this week we're going to be talking about some cool things because
have you ever seen a ghost?
So inspired by the topic of have you ever seen a ghost? After we finished recording the podcast, I watched Halloween for the first time.
Nice.
Never seen it. So basically,
Patrick Swayze's not in it.
He's not worth watching. No. So basically, right after the podcast finished, Halloween 2018 came on. And I hadn't seen that, and I was like, oh, I wonder if I need to have seen the original Halloween. So I just stopped, went back, found Halloween on demand, and I watched that. And I tell you what, people talk a lot about John Carpenter being, you know, good movie soundtrack artist. They're right.
Yeah,
he's the bloody best.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
That like.
Well, that wasn't John Carpenter, but
who's that? Oh, that's
that was
Jean-Michel Jarre. Yeah,
no, it wasn't Jean-Michel Jarre.
It's
Mike Oldfield.
Tubular Bells. Yeah, of course. Yeah, that's spooky. But then there's also just the really spooky bits where he just like holds whatever Arp Odyssey or something that he's holding. I assume you know what the synth is, Matt. But there's bits where he's just like holding the. This like really horrible noise for absolutely ages. It sounded lovely.
The best one is definitely The Thing. That's got some of the best.
Oh my god, what a fantastic movie!
I watched that recently for the first time, and that's really good. But
Kurt Russell, Destroyer of Martins.
Yeah,
vintage Martins.
Yeah, totally.
That's why you'll never see a vintage Martin in a film again.
No, that's it.
They said they would never ever loan a guitar out to anyone ever again.
Yeah.
Basically, what I want is great. I want recommendations of movies with really good sound design. That's what I'm into.
Okay. Asked for that on the podcast before.
Have I?
You know,
a little while ago, we watched The Barbarian Sound Studio with Toby Jones.
Yep.
And that movie was absolutely fantastic in terms of sound design. Uh-huh. Really, really creepy.
The ultimate tape delay in that he basically rigs up the entire room with the tape.
Yeah.
Pulls it out from one side and then sticks a load of pencils in the wall and then runs the tape around the entire length of the room and then back into the tape.
Absolutely amazing. It's so good. It's so, so good. Basically, the movie is about Toby Jones, who was kind of his real job was like BBC nature sound design artist.
Right.
And he gets hired to do the sound design for like this Italian horror B movie. And it's just like he does all this weird stuff.
Things start going awry.
It's really good. Right.
Oh,
it's
that
really
sounds
good.
Amazing.
But yeah, that's the sort of thing that I want is like weird sound design.
Oh, okay, awesome. Well, this week, speaking of weird sound design, it's not really, I can't segue, I still can't do it, but we've actually received a load of cool stuff because it's GOTY, it's Gear of the Year, is around the corner. We are a month away from Gear of the Year. 2000 and what year are we in? 2019.
Yeah.
So we are a month away from Gear of the Year 2019, which means we're being sent loads of cool things for us to consider for the podcast. So
Mark, your computer's taking off. I thought like someone had left the tap on in my kitchen or something.
My computer has just decided to sound like an airplane taking off, and also now the mouse doesn't move.
It's okay, Mark. You don't need that computer. It's fine. It's fine. You don't need it.
I'm going to reset and see what
anyway,
happens.
Anyway, so yeah, we've been sent a load of cool stuff. And whilst we are considering it all for Gear of the Year, we want to talk about it as we get it. So we've got some cool stuff from Dusky Electronics and from Hello Sailor Effects as well. And we're going to talk a little bit more about some of the Fender effects later in the podcast. But first of all, Matthew Knight, you've actually made some music.
I know. It's a rare thing. It's so rare that I put a track on SoundCloud and then realized the last time I put something on there was 5 years ago.
Oh, there we go.
So, you know, keep up this. Have an album. Never.
50 years time.
50 years time.
So you've actually you've put this out on SoundCloud. You linked it in the Guitar Nerds Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum, where you can check it out, listener, if you want to. Matt and I put a link there, and essentially the entire thing is created via guitar.
Yeah, it's. Do you know what? It was interesting. So I had a holiday last week. Shock horror! Actually, got some time off, and I decided to do something meaningful with every day that I had a day off. And one day, I went to my friend's studio. So he's based in a writing room at Air Studios in North London, and he is a kind of programmer and sound designer. He was actually my guitar teacher at BIM, and he's done a bunch of other stuff. But he got really into modular synths about 2 or 3 years ago. We were just sort of around his, and he's sort of been teaching me the sort of basics of modular synthesis and trying to understand it a little bit more, and was running me through some of the modules that he had. And one of them was this crazy sequencer where effectively it always cycles through a random set of 8 notes. You pick the 8 notes in a scale and it will cycle through them randomly, but then it's got it was called the Turing machine. And what you do is when you find a bit of the sequence you like, you turn this control and it freezes the last 4 notes. So if you'd like, because obviously modular synthesis, the sound tends to evolve over time, so you can kind of freeze frame little bits. And we just sort of captured this little bit and we were sort of jamming on it for a bit, and we were like, and then all of a sudden a couple of hours later this kind of track emerged from it. But what was funny is he was like, you should play the guitar parts, because I know you don't get a lot of chance to sort of sit down and record guitar, and you know, I'll kind of do the production and mix it a little bit. So I did all the guitar parts, and then after 2 or 3 hours of recording all the parts, realized we were still plugged directly into the modular synth. And I was like, this sounds amazing. Literally might as well just sack everything off, buy a modular synth, just plug my guitar straight into it.
So was your guitar triggering modular synth sounds?
Well, what was it? What's interesting is because you have to change, you have to up the line level for a modular synthesizer. You have to up the level for a modular synthesizer because the guitar pickup sound is not hot enough to drive a module. And effectively, no, all you're doing is using that as the audio source to run through a filter, and then you're then sending that filtered sound out into everything else. So we were basically sending it into an envelope filter, then we were sending that into a distortion pedal, and then we were sending that, well, into a distortion module, and then sending that into a reverb module, and then sending that into an effects loop, and then we were running into an H9. And no amp modeling, like, actually nothing in terms of amp modeling. It was just straight into that and then straight out into Logic. It was really bizarre. It was a bizarre experience, and it's just like, oh. And it was just kind of made me appreciate kind of actually recording some music and not being tied down to all the gear that I've got at home, because you get so used to all the pedals and amps and the sounds you get at home, you never really kind of experiment with anything.
Well, I'm part upset that the record is not you getting to use the ungiggable rig, but also, you know, sort of,
I mean, it's pretty ungiggable. It's a Dofer monster case. It's like the biggest Eurorack case you can buy. It's got about 80 modules in it.
Crikey.
But the great thing is that you can, you know, people do actually meet up for these like crazy modular synth jams. But one thing I thought was brilliant was we patched in this sequence and we had it going, we recorded it. And then when we pulled all the leads out, we were like, that's it. It will never ever patch that same sound in again.
Mate, you can recreate that in plugins. No problem. I'll do it for
no
you.
No problem.
50 quid.
Just Boss SY1, you know, just all the synth sounds are in there. Might as well just plug straight into that.
Are you suggesting that essentially during this, you were the Robert Fripp and Toby was the Brian Eno?
Yes, that's exactly what I'm suggesting. And it was very glorious.
Nice. Oh, wonderful.
But yeah, no, also just had a bit of fun with the Eventide H9 and kind of exploring some of the sort of weirder apps in there. He's got like a Fernandez sustainer guitar, so we were using that for a little bit as well. We were doing a bit where I was sort of like holding a couple of notes, and then he was like tweaking the filter in real time on the Eurorack. So it sort of got me down this sort of dangerous rabbit hole of going, God, I really need some like Eurorack modules now to like patch into the rest of my system. So
that feels
I don't need any pedals. I just need
Eurorack. It feels like the end goal for the ungiggable rig is that like you're eventually going to have something where you don't even need to like touch a guitar or touch a keyboard or anything. You're just going to have like an LFO going and that, like an oscillator, like a noise generator, and then you're just going to plug it into the synth and that'll be it.
That is the great thing about modular synths, is that once you've got, you don't even really need a keyboard for the sequencer. You can just tell it to like trigger a bunch of random notes.
Yeah.
And then that's it, you're there.
What did Game Changer release this year that was a Euro rack?
It was just the plasma in rack form, yeah.
In rack form, but it's not Euro rack because it's not like patchable. Because obviously what a Eurorack is doing is sending voltages out from different points trigger other points.
It's 500 series though, isn't it? So it fit in like a Eurorack spacing.
No, it's normal 19 inch rack unit.
Is it?
Yeah.
That seems weird.
I'm sure I've seen one that's like 500 series size. It was a collaboration with...
Oh yeah, because they've done a couple.
Called... I can't remember what their name is. I'm going to find it.
They have done a couple of things.
Plasma Eurorack. Let's have a look.
I'm sure because when Jan and I went to the Brighton synth meetup or whatever it was,
I can see it. The plasma drive. They definitely do a synth a Eurorack version of it.
Yeah.
Cool. I'm going to buy one.
It's a collaboration with Erica Synths.
They were there.
At the Brighton Modular Meet, and that's when I saw this live. And to be honest,
cool.
You know, it looks cool on a pedal board, but can you imagine a whole like wall of 500 series Eurorack stuff? Plasma tube going. It looks it looks like a mad science experiment.
The great thing is about kind of Eurorack for guitar players is that, you know, you can get some kind of crazy experimentation if you can drive the level up to plug it in. I mean, it's basically like patchable, the ultimate patchable set of guitar effects.
Yeah,
because there's so much that you can do.
The thing that gets me as well is how affordable it is. I mean, obviously you have to buy quite a lot of Eurorack stuff, but you know, it's like, you know, I see it come up on Reverb all the time, like used, I don't know, whatever, a drive section or something, they're like £20 and you can just chuck one in there and like see how it sounds.
Yeah,
it
I mean, the thing is work, that get rid the, of it. This kind of area is expanding so quickly and there's so many designers out there doing so much crazy stuff, both digital and analog. And it's a shame, there was a company, and I actually saw them at NAMM last year and I asked them about it, called Pittsburgh Modular, who made a guitar pedal board that was basically a modular case.
Yeah.
But it had a guitar input, so it converted everything into the right level for Eurorack. And they were like, it just wasn't very, very popular. But since we discontinued it, like, loads of guitar players want one.
Yeah, of course.
I'm like, you definitely need to start making it again. I think it was quite cool being able to actually use guitar effects pedals with it, because you can just get a send and return. And he actually had a spring tank, an actual, Accutronics spring tank, and had that patched into it.
In the, like, was it in like 500 series housing?
No. He just bought the spring tank and it's got the kind of send and return cables, and then it's got a send and return module, and then was just patching the audio through the send and return module, and it was going straight into the spring tank.
Matty, how long is it before you get into analog video synthesis? That's my thing. It's like, that's since we went to that modular meetup and there was people doing video synthesis there, that's blowing my mind.
And it's so weird because it's on like old CRT like TVs, and it's just like different colours and stuff.
No offence, if you know, if anyone's listening who does video synthesis, it looks rubbish, but it also looks very intriguing.
Yeah.
Like,
I think if it's one of those things, if you were on the inside of it, you'd understand it.
Well, basically, it looked like you have to do a lot of work to essentially create something that looks like you've just got an old like VHS that's a bit broken.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I could create that with like a preset in Adobe Premiere.
Yeah, yeah. So that's not the point, though, is it? That's
of course.
But go on, Matt.
I was going to say, with all of this, the one thing is it's made me realise I need to do some more music. So I'm going to try and make it like a weekly thing. We're going to try and meet up once a week, once every couple of weeks, and actually try and put something out there. Just, just on a serious note here, you know, just in terms of like my mental health and mental well-being, actually sitting down and doing some music for the first time in ages and kind of not having to think about work made me really appreciate how lucky we all are, to actually like be able to like play an instrument and how good it is and how nice it makes you feel.
Yeah.
And yeah, doing a bit of music was like, oh, this is exactly what I needed to do on my time off. So,
well, in an effort to really limit the amount of time you have to do that, Matt, of course, I haven't spoken to you about this yet, but we will be soon launching the second series of the Friday specials, where me and Matt will be talking to other people. And we've actually got the very fella who created Game Changer Audio.
Oh really?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he's coming over to the UK. So me and Matt are gonna do a little bit of a podcast with him about all the cool stuff that they've done, because they're such an incredibly innovative company that have kind of come out of nowhere. And of course, you know, we've spoken about it a ton of times. They're sort of really humble beginnings in the basement of NAMM on their mates'
the brass stand or whatever. Yeah.
Exactly, and the popularity of that pedal.
The
fact that the plus pedal hit every single major sort of news outlet for guitars that year and did so well. And it then led on to that company just seeking out, rather than looking to expand their line, they look to find innovative ways to... It's less about what the effect is and more about how they achieve it. So, you know, obviously the plus pedal is a freeze pedal, but in a very innovative way of delivering that effect via the piano foot pedal. And then you have the plasma drive, which is a drive fuzz pedal, but, you know, with that exposed sort of lightning bolt of electricity, creating the sound
visually, you can like you've got a visual representation
exactly,
of it.
But
yeah,
also that sound's being created via really organic sound degradation because of that sort of gap in the circuit. And and you know, they seem to seek that out throughout. So yeah, I think a really interesting company to talk to. So
that'd be really cool. I hope he turns you into something.
Yeah,
like, you know, I assume he can do that. Like, you know,
like a wizard. He's like a wizard.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, right. I figure that's how these products get made, is right, with, you
wizardry,
know, magic.
Other
magic.
People's souls.
Yeah.
Pulled cool. into the pedals.
Yeah, I'm up for that. I read a lot of high fantasy. Yeah,
hi.
Is there any high fantasy where guitar pedals are involved?
No, not often, I'll be honest. Anyway.
Joe's working on an
anthology. No, Joe's just high.
Yeah. Joe's high fantasy. That's the podcast title.
Yes, it probably will be. Jay Cross, you actually played a Halloween special show this week. You played bass?
I mean, that's not the surprising bit about it. I would say the surprising bit about it is I played a gig, not that I played bass.
You play gigs occasionally, and you have a lovely bass guitar, which
I do. Yeah, I do. And actually we talked about this very briefly on the
live podcast
that we did last night.
GNL.
So. No. Oh,
GNL Live.
Not a GNL. That's not what he plays. You mean Guitar Nerds Live?
Oh yeah.
Oh, GNL. Not G and
L.
GNL Live.
Okay.
Hang on. Oh no. I've done this whole again of
Anyway,
ATM machine.
Yes.
ATM. I played a show. I did a Distillers covers band for Halloween.
That's fantastic. What a wonderful band to do a cover of.
Yeah, so basically my mate suggested that we do it, and I was like, oh yeah, I love the Distillers, what a great band, like that'd be a really fun thing to do. And then listen to the songs, I was like, oh no, I like those two songs and I don't know any of the other sort, like I don't know anything else basically. So we played those two songs, and after like the second practice, it all kind of came out that basically everyone had agreed to do this, but nobody really knew the Distillers that well, except for City of Angels and Drain the Blood. So we all had to like learn loads of stuff, but no, it was really fun. I had a good time. I used an Ampeg Portaflex 350.
Well, that was going to be, we all knew what bass you were going to play.
Yeah, of course. So I used my
American standard. Olympic white.
The bass amp was an Ampeg Portaflex, and I've just never got on with them.
Have you never got on with them?
No, I never liked them.
The thing about those Portaflexes is I actually think they sound great. It's just that they break. It's not that the sound is any problem. I tell you what, I was always on the fence. I always thought they sounded absolutely fine. There was no problem with them. I didn't especially love them. I didn't hate them. They were perfectly good, sort of, you know, solid state amplifiers. There was no problem with the sound of them. And then Juan Udret toured the Nocturnica tour for Mars Volta playing two of the 500 series through 410s. And it was like, well, I mean,
so like
he's the greatest pace player of all time, and right, he was using two port flexes.
Yeah. Well, and everything, and it sounded good and everything.
Yeah.
I mean, I've never been able to get a good sound out of them, and I don't really know why.
And you can't drive them very well, but they've got a good sort of presence.
This week's episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast is sponsored by Celestion and their brand new Ruby Alnico guitar speaker, purpose built to create rich, beautiful vintage tones. The Ruby oozes a richly musical warmth with mellow highs and a smooth, sophisticated mid-range that always seems to sound just right. The classic Alnico speaker shape and lush, deep red colour ensures Ruby really looks the part in your cab and guarantees that no one could possibly mistake this remarkable new guitar speaker's family history. Check out Celestion's new Ruby at retailers including Lean Business in the UK, Tube Amp Doctor in Germany, Algam in France, Eco Music in Italy, Ibelaud in Spain, plus Gear for Music, Toman, and The Back Shop. And in the USA, you can buy through retailers like Sweetwater, Musicians Friends, AMS, Parts Express, Loudspeakers Plus, and of course Amazon. And for more details, check out Celestion.com.
Now we should dive. We should do some mailbag stuff because we have received some really cool things.
You've
the
already
post
spoiled
this
that
week.
Though. You did that in the intro. Well,
yeah.
I was thinking that at the time. I was like, "You're not going to be able to do."
Whoa! Hold on. There's a jingle here.
Mailbag.
There you go. You know, there was the jingle. You did it. Yeah, okay. I did it. Yeah, okay. I got that in. That was enough time to get it in. Anyway, so we've been sent a handful of things. The first thing I want to talk about is the Hello Sailor pedal that we've received. We actually we got this from Joe from Hello Sailor at
Leagues
at the London International Guitar Show. Yeah, that's right, because Joe also bought the Gibson Melody Maker.
Yeah, so that I was you were saying there's a bit of a story. So before we get onto the pedal, yeah, Joe from Hello Sailor bought the Gibson 65?
60, well, that's actually part of the story. Okay. 61. So
he bought it from you on your stand.
In 1961, Gibson were making... Gibson made the first double pickup single cut melody makers.
Yeah.
Now with these they had the serial number stamped in the back. Now whoever owned this bass changed the pickups, the two single coils for two P90s. They also changed the bridge out for a one with compensating saddles.
Yeah.
But they'd also painted the bass.
Has it definitely the guitar?
The guitar. Do I keep saying bass? Yeah.
Has it definitely been refinished? Because we were struggling to work that out.
So this is part of actually the story. Yes, it had been. Someone had tried to return sort of the edges and the back of the neck and everything to black whilst leaving a burst in the middle.
Yeah.
So what Joe has done since he's owned it is taken all that finish.
You're messing with your mic there, Jay.
Sorry, it was. Wow. It just wasn't right, and now it is.
Okay, good.
It's taken all that finish off because the original ones you could see the wood grain, and of course you couldn't on that.
And of course
the serial number was also below that
level of
paint. So Joe has very carefully removed all of that horrible black spray paint from the instrument to return it to its original state.
Okay.
He's also going to put one of the proper original wraparound bridges on there. But one of the things he's discovered since uncovering the serial number is it's actually a 1960.
Wow.
Which is amazing because those melody makers weren't even made for the whole of the year in 1960.
Can we charge him more?
Yeah, I was going to say, he owes you some money.
He owes some more money?
Yeah, evidently.
So the P90s are definitely not original. They would have been those single coils.
Yes, they would have been single coils. And actually, in the pictures that he's sent, sort of where he's taken everything off, they've really sort of butchered everything. and then the pictures of the guitar that he sent afterwards. He's you can really see that the
you can really see the wood grain.
uh, You can
Joe.
Yeah, sorry. You can really see that that it's been kind of those pickups have really been carved in there without much sort of love and attention to the
just a chisel job.
Yeah, really is, but for goodness sake. But what is super cool is that it's a 1960, which Gibson only made those guitars for maybe 6 months in that year. So it's a super cool, super rare, you know.
Yeah,
really,
nice.
Really cool guitar. Anyway, we actually got given a drive pedal by Joe from Hello Sailor that day. And
is it a drive pedal though?
Well, it's a dual gain stage pedal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, so from plugging it in earlier, because we spent a few minutes with it, we spent a decent amount of time there, 10 or 15 minutes running through it.
It's important to point out the sort of the nature of Hello Sailor effects as well.
Well, yeah. But what I was going to say is, you know, this particular one doesn't actually drive that much, even with kind of like, controls on full and stuff. It didn't seem to be, I mean, it was pushing the amp and it was kind of more of a make gooder, I would suggest. Yeah. than a full-on like drive. You know, it definitely wasn't getting anywhere near like fuzz or distortion territory.
No, it's incredibly transparent. Yeah. So almost a boost, but very dynamics enhancing.
Yeah,
it's pedal.
To me, it sounds like a make gooder, like a nice kind of preampy front endy kind of thing.
It was exactly that. I didn't want to turn it off after I'd turned it on, sort of thing.
Definitely.
It sort of made everything sort of zing, which was great. Like a nice amount of treble boost in there, and obviously a lovely amount of sort of dynamics being increased as you sort of raise the dual volume controls. A very cool pedal. But Hello Sailor have a really interesting ethic behind their sort of how they produce pedals, because they don't do a sort of set line of effects at all.
They do, as far as I'm aware, Joe does some circuits that you can request. So if you say, I want, you know, the pedal that sounds like the one that we've got, yes, you can absolutely get that. But you can also say, oh, I want it in this shape box, and I want it this colour on it, and I want this kind of transfer on it. He'll do pretty much any artwork that you want. If you can find, from what I understand, if you can find a picture of it, it seems it can be on the pedal. Any finish, you can have the knobs.
Any chassis,
You have the knobs, any style that you want. I think you can change the lights and stuff on there. The one that we've got's got like a big jewel light on it, hasn't it? Like
and
Fender
it's pink, which is exactly right up our street. This is the Anchor Drive, is the pedal that we've got.
Yeah, yeah. So again, you can. I think you can request the effect that you want, and then he'll basically build a kind of bespoke case for you to.
But what an original and unique way of kind of doing effects in the sense that they're completely one off.
Yeah.
There's no. It means that even if you're going to get a pedal that's the same as someone else's, you can have it in a completely unique chassis. I think that's an incredibly cool way of having a business model.
Yeah, I'm into it in a big way, and I thought it sounded very good. Like I said, I think it would fill definitely that kind of make gooder vibe. And you know, at the top end, it starts to break up a little bit, but I do think it's kind of an enhancer rather than, you know, a tone destroying fuzz monster.
100%. Speaking of fuzz, the other pedal that we received this week was the Dusky Electronics Hypatia.
Hypatia.
Is it Hypatia? Have we looked at how it's pronounced?
No, I just like...
Just making it all fancy in that.
No, I'm pretty sure that the way you pronounce that word is Hypatia.
Yeah, that does sound legitimate.
I'm going to have a look.
I'm up for that.
Etymology.
Anyway, so we're speaking to the guys at Dusky Electronics because, of course, we contacted them for Gear of the Year, and they have a distributor in the UK in Break the Machine, who are one of my favourite like effect pedal places in the UK. What a wonderful company Break the Machine are. You guys have all checked out Break the Machine as a website? Listeners, you absolutely have to check out breakthemachine.co.uk if you haven't already. It's a wonderful website to find all sort of the weirdest boutique stuff you possibly can. I think as a company, they do a fantastic job of getting in all that stuff from from specifically the US that we don't necessarily always get access to over here.
Hypatia is how you pronounce it.
Oh, thank you.
That's literally what I said.
Comes from the Greek mathematician and philosopher. She worked in Alexandria and invented the astrolabe. I guess that's how that's pronounced. Amongst other things, she was murdered by rampaging Christians because she was a pagan. There we go.
I mean, nice. I'd just like to point out exactly how I said it.
Yeah, sure. I just never heard that before.
The interesting thing about this brand is I only know them because of the amp they make.
go on.
And I sort of knew they made pedals, but it's all, I'm sure it's just because I've seen the amp a few times at trade shows, but they make an amp called the D2O, which is one of the coolest looking amps out there. I think it's kind of like a bent mesh metal chassis. It looks a bit like a kind of Victory style, but it's got a very weird graphic, which is actually part of the metal framework, but just a super simple volume bass, middle, treble cut.
It kind of looks like the designs on it and stuff, and their logo look like you might see them on the side of like Evel Knievel's bike or something like that.
Yeah, it's got like that kind of vibe about it. But the amp is a 2-6L6 32-watt sort of like awesome kind of American single channel amp. So that's how I actually know them. But I sort of knew they do pedals, but I've never really checked them out properly.
Tell you what, this is the first pedal in a long time where I've plugged it in, not had to do very much, and gone, that sounds absolutely incredible.
It does.
In a market where, you know, everything's a drive pedal, everything's a fuzz pedal, you know, there's like so much choice. It's been a long time since I plugged something in and went, that just works straight away. And I think actually, unlike you, Joe, I preferred it on the lower gain settings.
Yeah.
Where it was almost doing kind of Keith Richards sort of like pushed amp. You know, we were running it through Jay's, well, it's Princeton you've got, isn't it, down there?
Yeah.
Princeton. And it was like just pushing that really like in a really organic sounding way. And it, for me, it wasn't even, you know, they describe it as a fuzz overdrive distortion. For me, it performed best when it was doing overdrive, definitely.
I think it's rare that you experience a pedal that can do all three of those.
Yeah.
It was as organically as it could.
Yeah, and you know, they say distortion, but it doesn't go up to kind of, you know, it's not doing like metal zone sounds or anything like that. It's a real cool rock and roll pedal that will do, kind of like I say, like Keith Richards-y, chimey,
yeah,
kind of
absolutely.
Overdrive.
But at the other end of it, I was pushing the meat control that it has on there.
Pushing and the meat.
Yeah, I was pushing the meat and I was... I was able to create some real sort of Queens of the Stone Age style, a sort of melody fuzz, as it were. So, you know, sort of really gated style fuzz at the top end of the pedal. I just love the fact that it was one pedal that sounded great for that and then sounded absolutely fantastic when you were playing sort of cheesy rock licks on it.
I didn't mean that negatively.
I meant it was fantastic that pedal could do all of those things. So I really, it's very hard to get excited about drive pedals anymore.
Yeah.
And this was a really, really cool, really cool pedal.
The thing I normally have with pedals that say they can do like overdrive and fuzz is that generally they're like quite dark sounding, because actually, you know, the fuzz is the thing that they're going for and they want that thick kind of stonery doom kind of fuzz. This actually doesn't sound like that.
Have to max it out to get that.
Yeah, this actually kind of opened the amp up quite a bit. And, you know, I keep going back to the kind of Keith Richards thing, but that is what it sounded like to me, that kind of... you know, we had single coils through it. I was just using Jay's Mustang.
It's so good that every time we're trying things out, we're trying them through a Mustang and a Princeton.
Fender, isn't it?
Really not a great...
It's the only thing
of...
that's allowed in this house.
Yeah,
there's no other.
We're talking about... I've got...
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I've got other guitars.
You've got Fender pajamas, you know, chopping board.
I do have a Fender chopping board.
Surely the pajamas are on their way, right?
I was actually toying with the idea of ordering the Fender Christmas jumper.
Yeah.
You showed me that earlier.
I did. I was texting Joe and I showed him the Christmas jumper. It looks really good. We are like, we're almost out. And I've been like saying,
what?
Yeah.
It's
like
selling.
We've sold loads. And we kept a few back for the website, and I've been like, oh, maybe I want one. Maybe I don't. Oh, no, I don't really like Christmas. And then like, I know if I don't get it, I'm going to regret it. So.
Did you say I don't really like Christmas?
No, I don't really like Christmas jumpers. Oh, right, I just okay, think fine. That, but like, I will regret it if I don't buy it. But then again, also, my parents already think I'm like a total company man, because all I do, whenever I go around to their house, I'm wearing Fender clothes.
Fender tracksuit, Fender pullovers.
Anyway, that's, you know, sorry, bye-bye.
I'm really into this. We've been talking a lot about Gear of the Year stuff in the last 24 hours, thinking about what we're going to do preparations-wise for, you know, when do we test stuff? What are we going to test? This is looking promising for me.
It's actually kind of irrelevant this year because we know the Mariposa is going to win everything.
Well, I mean, there is that. But don't forget, we're doing categories slightly different this year. So it's a little bit more of a kind of mixed bag. I like this a lot.
Speaking of Jay being a company man, so I'm going for a second. Jay lent me a couple of weeks ago the Fender reflecting pool, which we have spoken about, but we've spoken about in a very sort of general sense of Jay talking about the pedal, what it does, and introducing it and its price point, etc., etc. But now, having actually sat down and played it, and wanting to kind of talk to you, listener, from a perspective of just like. And like an effects pedal from any brand, regardless of the fact that Jay works for Fender, the reflecting pool is absolutely banging, like really, really good. I'm going to be really pushing it for Gear of the Year this year. So it's £299 British pounds, I think, roughly that sort of price.
I don't think it's that much.
No,
actually,
really? Wow. Okay, yeah. Even better. It's certainly the most expensive Fender pedal that they've put out. And I was kind of like, yeah, this is cool. All the Fender pedals seem really good, but what the Fender pedals have kind of seemed to me is perfectly good versions of things that are already there. So certainly if you wanted that look and that chassis and to buy into Fender, then Fender do a version of all these things that are already on the market. The reflecting pool comes across as like, here's Fender doing their sort of Strymon-y thing, which everyone has. It's absolutely fantastic. Like a really, really good experimental, weird atmospheric pedal. How much is it, Jay, sort of roughly?
Like £250.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, just looking on Google Shopping, there's some that are a bit cheaper than that. But yeah, they're like £250 on Fender.com.
That is a very good price for a pedal that does this much. Certainly having it's a 3-foot switch delay reverb. So you've got 1-foot switch dedicated to tap, and then one for, you know, the on-off for the reverb, one on-off for the delay. And then you've got each of those works on it, the reverb and the delay has toggles between different kind of presets. The important one for the reverb is the special, which is your shimmer.
Yeah. So basically, there's three different positions, and in each position, there's three different styles of reverbs. So there's hall, and then you've got large hall, small hall, medium hall. Room, which is large room, small room, medium hall, etc. And then on the special, you've got a shimmer, and I think the shimmer sounds really good.
Very good. Reverse.
There is a it's like a gated reverb, but the one of the quirks of it is if you turn the level knob and the extra control all the way
clockwise,
yeah,
then you get a revert, like a reverse gated reverb.
That's what I was certainly finding with it, yeah.
That is really cool, really cool. Interesting. And then the other one is a modulated reverb, which again I think sounds really
nice. And it can be a really hard gate as well. You can mm-hmm. use it for some real sort of like volume swelling, like sort of Jimi Hendrix guitar solo yeah. in reverse style effect. So I thought really cool. The shimmer obviously appeals the most.
Yeah, but. I really like the reflecting pool. I think it's amazing. So basically it's a lot of people have thought, well, you know, Fender already do the marine layer reverb and the mirror image delay.
Yeah.
Why are you just putting it in the same box? And it's like, it's not just those two pedals. They've been engineered from the ground up. It's a totally new reverb, totally new delay based on the same DSP engine as the Treeverb, which loads of people have been raving about, and the Pinwheel as well, which is the Leslie emulator. I just think it sounds really, really good.
Very good. So the delay side as well has
go ahead.
The delay side
sounds more authentic coming from you.
It splits between digital, analog and tape. Obviously that's relatively standard, but what I really like is you've got those modulation controls with the rate and the depth on the modulation of the reverb as well, and especially on tape. Like, it can sound a bit too much on analog and certainly too much on digital, yeah. but on the tape setting you can get that really gorgeous sort of vintage wobble
yeah.
that you would get off of a Space Echo. And I was very impressed with the, like, actually sitting down and spending some time and just sort of playing some guitar with this pedal at the sort of authenticity of specifically the tape side of that delay, and blending it with that with the shimmer style reverb. I was like, well, this is post rock in a box, sounding absolutely fantastic, probably for, you know, almost less money than most other things on the market offering the same sort of thing. Sure, a lot of the other competition in sort of the higher end will offer like a digital screen and a lot more presets than are available here, but what this is, it's kind of a cut down example of everything that you need if you want ambient sounds. I absolutely couldn't fault it. I sort of turned it on expecting to be like, this is fine.
Yeah,
and kind of
figured that
later,
when I like left it with you. I thought you were like, no, I'm not sure he's gonna like this, but
well, I just, do you know what, I almost didn't try it out because I was kind of like, I know what this pedal is going to be.
Yeah.
I'm happy talking about it from a sort of outsider's perspective, and we obviously do that with some gear, but this I sort of actually finally got around to sitting down with, and then yeah, like 45 minutes later I sort of found myself like being like, oh, I should probably stop playing. So, if you know, even Emma, my girlfriend, came in and was like, oh, this sounds really good. It's like, you know, from her office across the way. And it's a really, really fantastic pedal.
Yeah.
You actually, I didn't put this in the notes, but on another note on the Fender pedals, you also left with me the
Trapper fuzz.
No.
Did I not leave you the fuzz?
You did.
I did leave you the
you
fuzz.
Did, but I didn't.
I want to try the fuzz, actually.
I didn't mess around with the Trapper fuzz
Blake
yet.
Blake from the Tone Mob.
Has two,
yes. I managed to hook him up with one. Well, with two, actually. And he's really into it because he's really been into the Pelt as well.
Right,
which
is the
first.
The Pelt is fantastic.
The Pelt's great. The Trapper's just a little bit different. The other one that I lent you was the Pour Over, the envelope filter.
Yes!
Which, like, whenever I sit down and play, I'm like, well, I don't know how to use an envelope filter. Like,
I thought it was really good. I thought the Pour Over was absolutely fantastic. I had loads of fun with it. I thought it worked especially well for bass. I thought it was very good that it has like a sort of treble cut, bass cut switch on it, so you can get rid of that sort of guitar-y cut that so many envelope filters come with. It works perfectly for bass. For like an absolute funk machine, I thought it was really cool. I was very into it. I've been trying to get into that sort of sound recently. In fact, do you know what? After I used the Pour Over for some time, and I was like, this is a fantastic envelope filter, really, really cool. I was like, well, I'm not going to use the Pour Over on my board, but my Boss MS3 does have like a T-Wah sort of sound in it. I was like, I'm gonna mess around with this and try and find a sound. And again, my girlfriend Emma came in from her office and she was like, what are you doing? This sounds awful. Can you stop? I'm gonna shut the door. And I was like, cool, okay. So people still don't like envelope filters, but that doesn't mean that I don't like envelope filters. Anyway, speaking about Fender, we actually need to dive headfirst into some news.
Can I actually talk about the biggest bit of news this week before we get into some minor league news?
You can, yes.
I want to talk about the Black Star Misfits 3.
I mean, I can't believe that we've managed to crowbar after, 250 episodes of this podcast?
241.
We've just crowbarred two Misfits references into one episode.
I know people are waiting for the big news about the big sparkly new Fender products, but how about this? Listen, hear me out. Black Star Fly 3... Front panel.
Yeah.
Misfits logo.
Love it.
Top panel.
Yeah.
Lime green. Sort of with the Misfits logo on it. Literally no other changes to a Fly 3.
Wait, but it's, what? It's got the Misfits. There's no even voicing changes.
Literally no other changes.
It's the same as the Def Leppard one that came out like a month ago.
Yeah. Literally no other changes. Just it's got the Misfits logo on the front and on the top.
Do Misfits play Black Star?
Who knows? Do they even use M's?
Unlikely.
Yeah, I mean, we talked a little bit about this yesterday. So Doyle Wolfgang von Frankenstein, who's the guitar player.
You love
player.
Saying that name.
Yeah, it's a great name. he's got his own October guitars.
Oh, he guitar. Does. Yes,
I don't know what amp he uses. I assume it's probably Black Star. Mark's just having a look there now.
I mean, I'm just looking at pictures of old blokes, really. That's right, kind of... I mean, there's literally no pictures where I can see their amps because they've got all sorts of other crazy stuff on the stage.
I like the fact if you Google Doyle von Frankenstein, like Google, like add in the rest of the sentence, the first thing is workout.
Yeah. The geezer is absolutely ripped. He's ripped into oblivion.
When I met him at NAMM, and the dude is really tall and really ripped, I was like, it is... absolutely ridiculous.
It looks like they use Ampeg for bass, but I can't see any pictures anywhere where I can see a guitar amp. Yeah, maybe he uses Axe FX or something.
I can't imagine he uses Axe FX.
No, if you're a big Misfits fan, then Black Star have got the home solution for you. Anyway, can we talk about? Let's talk about.
Wait! Oh, I found it.
Oh god!
He actually uses an Ampeg SVT.
What Doyle does?
Yeah.
What?
He's like, he did a rig rundown on Premier Guitar in 2013.
Fairly recent as far as Misfits go.
I like bottom, says Doyle. I don't like mid-range. I want to feel it. Which is why he swears by Ampeg SVT Classic Tube bass heads running 4x12 cabs. and then his distortion comes from a Digitech Hardwire distortion pedal.
That is the weirdest rig. I think it would make more sense to me if you went, yeah, he actually does use Fly 3s on stage. which of these two are the real rig that Doyle von Frankenstein uses? Is it a Black Star Fly 3? Or is
Misfits
it
logo.
With a Misfits logo. Or is it an Ampeg SVT Classic with a hardwired distortion? I'd probably choose the Black Star, if I'm honest.
Yeah. Okay. Fine. All right. Right. Well, let's talk about the most exciting thing that's happened. Literally, if you're listening to this on the day it's come out, if you're listening to it on Patreon, then it's just happened. If you're listening to it on the normal release, then it happened yesterday,
or maybe some other time in the past.
Or if you're not listening to it when it's been released, then this has already happened, and this is not news to you.
Yeah. Fender have launched a new series of guitars, which is the American Ultra range. So the Ultra range sits up in the upper echelons of the Fender catalog, so replacing the Elite series. It's just a complete refresh of the line. I guess if we just go through the models bit by bit, and then we can sort of touch on the spec here and there.
So these are kind of, this is like Fender's session musician-y.
I guess, yeah. It's kind of like the...
This is them super modern. So
yeah, I mean, in the way that
have
the...
like noiseless pickups. Yeah. Active circuitry?
No, don't think so. No, I think it's just... not active circuitry.
But it's going to be all like... It's going to be all like...
None of them have been active, though.
No, you're right. I'm being silly. But it's all going to be like thin necks, contours.
Yep. So that's the main thing. So basically the two biggest changes with these guitars is number one, you've got the new carves on the back.
Right.
So basically there is a whole new style of contouring on the back, which probably people saw because some of the images got leaked at like, you know, a week ago or something, whatever.
And also the ad campaign had all the, in that like...
Oh yeah, yeah. What is the ad campaign?
You'll never play another Fender
no,
again.
No, it's like you'll never play a Fender
You'll never play again Fender again.
You'll never play or see Fender the same way again. Or something
yeah,
like
and
that.
Basically that's never play a Fender the same again. Way again.
That's
and
it,
nice. Basically that is down to the fact that the contours on the back have changed. Now, that is something that's happened at previous times. I think the last major change to the contouring was probably about 10-15 years ago. I can't quite remember. But the main thing here is the there's a real effort to do a massively contoured heel. So if you do play up that dusty end at the top there, you can get you can get right up there, so to speak, and it is very, very comfortable. So it's a new neck shape, the Modern D, which I think is... You're right there, Matt.
Matt chuckling away at the Modern D.
So it's a new neck shape, which is the Modern D, and it has a 10 to 14 compound radius board. It's really comfortable. It's really, really, really comfortable to play.
The takeaway from me was that it doesn't feel like a standard Strat.
No.
It doesn't feel like what the American pros feel like.
No, it feels like an Ibanez.
No, what? It doesn't feel like an Ibanez.
Well, what was the thing, though? It's modern. It's super modern.
Yeah, but it's not like a wizard neck or anything like that. No. It's still recognisable as kind of a Fender neck. But with the difference in the radius on the fretboard and also that kind of the slim D, as it were, the mm-hmm. Modern D, it doesn't feel just like a standard Strat with some blingy hardware on it.
That is right. That is a great point.
Yeah, yeah. And that
that's what separates it from anything that's come before. Yeah, this isn't just a Fender with a few blingy bits and bobs to make it sessiony. They've really tried to make it a very modern playing.
Totally, and it really is kind of just a very different. Different guitar, you know, with all of those extra carves. There's new pickups, so it's the sixth generation of the noiseless pickups.
Jesus, they've had six generations
of the noiseless pickups. So that's what goes into these. I guess if we just run through the models.
So is it just Strats and Tellys?
No, full complement, as it were.
Oh.
So basically, there's
Meteora.
So Meteora, what else is there? There's a Katana.
Jagstang.
Jagstang. Yeah, they're all there, absolutely.
Imagine that if they just went, yeah, we're bringing back the Jagstang, everyone. You know, you love it from the grunge era, Kurt Cobain and that. So what we're going to do is American Ultra Jagstang.
Yeah. Left-handed, only left-handed. Yeah. Basically there is the standard Strat. Well, not standard Strat. There is a Strat with three single coils. There's some really cool new colors as well. Really interesting. The Texas T is the color that I like the best. So that's
the one you've brought round.
If
you're listening to this, I've put pictures of this up on our Instagram.
Yeah, so I brought the telly round. I actually think that
Matty.
I think the Strat looks a bit better than the telly. So the Strat has got a gold anodized plate, whereas the telly has got a silver anodized plate. But the idea behind Texas T is it is black with a gold undercoat. So in the same way that Candy Apple is kind of a little bit shimmery and a little bit sparkly, that's what you get with these, and it looks really, really nice.
Top
under
binding as well on the telly, which is very nice.
Yes, yeah, on the telly there is.
I'm in.
So what else have we got?
Yeah, you would like it, Matt. It's really nice.
So there is a new Sunburst, which is Ultra Burst. Ultra Burst is actually a lot more subtle than you think it's going to be. So funnily enough, I went to see, and I'm not sure if I should say this, but I'm going to say it anyway. On Friday night, I went to see my mate's band Creeper play, and the guitar player was playing one of these before were officially released. And he probably shouldn't have been playing it, but then he was playing guitar in the Distillers band that we did on Saturday,
right.
And he used it then as well. And there was a bunch.
Doesn't sound like the sort of guitar for that sort
of
thing.
There was a bunch of Fender employees there, and everyone was like, "Excuse me, what is going on there?" And yeah, it was fine.
Everyone
loved it. It was good. No. He's really into it. He thought it sounded fantastic.
Yeah, fair enough. I just wouldn't have pitched it for that sort of thing.
What's the kind of the biggest changes compared to the older ones then?
The biggest, well, they're still older, Matt. But the biggest change,
not Ash.
No, they're not. They're not ash. Actually, they are. There are a mixture of alder and ash. Yeah, the ash. So ash. If you want an ash body, you can get it in aged natural, which looks really
nice. I think
nice.
What Matt was actually saying was, what's the difference between these and the elites?
So it's the slender D.
So the main difference is the new neck shape. It's the body contour. The body contouring is the big thing. It's so complete. You really have to. And tomorrow, all the pictures will come out, and you'll be able to see it. The strat, I think, is really, really comfortable. The telly, the contour's there. I'm not sure that there's going to be that many people
tellies,
going up that
tellies
high.
Tellies have never been... Yeah, they've never suited this sort of style.
The contoured heel,
Well, just the whole idea of a Telecaster being sort of a modern playing instrument has never 100% worked for me.
Wait till I get further down the line.
Really, really. But the Strat, I thought was banging. Exactly what a modern Strat should be.
Much like the tellies that were in the American Deluxe and the American Elites, it's like you don't buy this guitar if you just want a telly, because like a telly is good enough. An American Performer or what used American Standard. You buy these if you want a telly, but like a bit more.
Well, there's just...
If you want to look like a telly but not have a telly, that's what this is for.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it does... It sounds like a telly, but you get, the noises pickups.
It doesn't feel like a telly because of the slender D.
You're saying slender D.
So all of these have got S1 switching. So in the Strat with three single coils... the S1 switch just brings in the neck pickup in whatever position you're in. So basically all those superfluous other switching options in the S1 that nobody knew what they did anyway have all gone. Because basically the only thing anyone other than Matty Knight wanted was to bring the neck pickup in you're in position one or two to get that all on sound. That comes in black, natural. There's a shimmery white which looks really nice. There's a mocha burst which looks really, really weird, very, very sparkly.
I'm into this. Mocha burst sounds like the sort of thing I'd like.
And cobra blue, which has been kind of the hero color.
Cobra blue
That's
Is it like Mercedes blue?
No, it's the blue Strat that
which is a bit like Mercedes blue.
Mercedes blue's darker.
Yeah, yeah.
Mercedes blue's very dark. The Clapton
came in that. That's the best guitar I've ever seen.
Moving over to one of the... That's the best guitar you've ever seen.
Yeah, the Mercedes blue Clapton Strat.
Right, okay.
Fine.
Good.
How do we sack him?
Yeah, I have absolutely no idea. So moving over to the HSS. So the humbucker in this is a redesigned double tap. Now, the double tap is a pickup that came out with the American Performer range, and I think this is a really, really cool pickup. It addresses the main issue that you get when people split a humbucker, and that's that a single coil from a split humbucker always sounds weaker than a standard single coil.
Yeah, there's such a massive volume dip.
Yeah, so basically what this is it combines a mixture of splitting and tapping. So when the pickup is in humbucker mode, one of the coils is overwound, but it's tapped. And then when you split it, it untaps and you get the full power.
That's really great.
It's really, really smart. And I don't understand why nobody had done it before. I think it's a really, really good feature.
Question for listeners. Has anyone who has a conventionally tapped guitar got on with the in-between sounds? Are they actually functional to anyone?
You mean when you've got a humbucker and you just split it?
Yeah,
right.
Rather. Just because I agree. Always the volume dip in the means all, that...
Yeah.
I'm like, well, you can't use this live because the volume dip between the two...
Between the two, the three pickups
is too much.
No, I've never got on with it. I've never got on with that, especially when it's a humbucker and then two singles.
Yeah.
I just don't think it really works, but this really addresses it, and it sounds absolutely quality. And you plugged it in earlier, Mark, and
yeah, it sounded really good. I mean, it sounds modern. Both the humbucker and the single coils sound like a modern bright guitar. Where I thought it really shone was on like high gain stuff, because obviously that's putting in a bit of the character that you just by their very nature you kind of lose a little bit from the noiseless pickups, and that's kind of always the way. These definitely are an improvement on the previous five generations
of noiseless pickup.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what, I put that Hypatia pickup on full gain,
Hypatia pedal,
and put it on the neck pickup, and it is literally noiseless.
You put
it over to the humbucker, and it's like, okay, yeah, you can hear the background. Or you put it on the single coil part of the
because basically when you split the double tap, it's not a noiseless
single coil.
Yeah.
It's or like, a noiseless humbucker.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of working as a regular single coil.
Yeah.
And you do notice the difference, definitely. So if that is one of the things on the top of your list of wants from a guitar, completely silent pickups, they are genuinely completely silent. Yeah, yeah. But they are, as you know, we've found with all kind of noiseless pickups, and you know, maybe it's just their voice this way, is they feel a little held back,
right,
compared to like, you know, a normal Tele or Strat single coil. But you know, they still sound really good. It's just a different voicing, and you get the benefits, obviously, no noise whatsoever.
Yeah, totally.
So, but where it really shone, the Strat in particular, was on high gain on that humbucker. Neck feels really good. It is slim. It did feel noticeably different to like an American standard neck, or what's now American Pro neck. But that's what this guitar's going for.
That's the thing, is I think now more than ever, the ranges of guitars have very distinct differences.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, whereas before it was
there's
American
point.
Special and American Standard and American Deluxe, and there are kind of features from all of them that's sort of, and then there's American Vintage, which also kind of fits in. I think now having the Performer Pro, the Ultra and the Original, having those four, you know, they're very, very different.
You're absolutely right. You completely know which demographic each range is aimed at, and you know which one's for you and which one isn't.
Yeah, it was very weird for a long time, particularly around the time of American Deluxe.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they were even doing quite a lot of the same finishes and stuff. Like, you could get basically an American, the Teles, for example, you get the American Standard Tele in the natural ash body, but it had like just the regular pickups and regular neck. And then you could get the American Deluxe, which was the, you know, like nice ash body, the same as the standard. The only differences really were the noiseless pickups and locking tuners,
didn't
I think.
Didn't they do like abalone like dot inlays on the
and things
as well.
Like that, which
never work on a Telecaster.
Yeah, I mean, not for me. Whereas this, there's a very big difference between something like American Professional Strat and this new American Ultra Strat. It's a whole new body shape, basically. You know,
that's exactly it. That's exactly it. And actually, you lead me on to a really good point, which is one of the other finishes you can get this in is, of course, Butterscotch Blonde. So you still have the Butterscotch Blonde in basically every series available.
Right, got it. So you can, if you want, disguise your very modern guitar
as a very classic guitar. Yeah, totally.
What about the other guitars?
So that is the Strats and Teles. There is a... where is it? I've got it here somewhere. Oh, no, I didn't open it up. There is a Jazzmaster.
Yeah.
Which is very interesting.
These also got the contoured heel?
They do, yes.
Interesting.
So contoured heel on those, fewer finishes. So if you want it in maple, you can get Plasma Red Burst, which is kind of an aged, like a
Sienna Sunburst.
Sorry, what?
Plasma Red Burst, right. Which is more like aged cherry sunburst.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Or what they used to be called Sienna Sunburst.
Sienna Sunburst was slightly different, but there's that. Or the Cobra Blue with a Perloy plate, which looks really cool. Or if you want it with a rosewood board, you can get Ultra Burst, or the picture that I've got here that Mark can see is Mocha Burst.
Yeah, it looks really good.
Which is really, really nice.
I'm into that.
I do like the idea of Mocha Burst. That does sound excellent.
And basically you've got the noiseless like Jazzmaster pickups on there, and 10 to 14 radius, and also the massively contoured heel. So that's the Jazzmaster. I'm just gonna try and fire through the last couple. The P-Bass is a PJ, which, you know, isn't
that's exactly what this should be.
It's not really
be.
For me, but,
no, but
it's
that's
exactly
what
why
this range
exactly,
should be.
Completely.
These are also contoured heel, I take it.
Also contoured heel,
and active circuit on there.
Active circuit, yeah, I think so.
They'll definitely be active.
From that photo,
they'll be 9
like
volt. They'll be active.
Pots.
Yes.
I hope it's got an active passive switch on it.
It does. And yes, it does have an active passive toggle switch on there.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
That's really cool. That just makes it really versatile. I actually think the basses work better than the guitars at this level, just because that that really is genuinely
I think it's more because we know what a session bass is rather than a normal person's bass. It's those lines aren't so kind of defined.
I guess you're right. But this genuinely is, you could take this into any session and you have you have all those modern funk things. If you want those active circuitries, you've got all those like Jaco sounds off of that jazz pickup on the bridge. You can turn it to passive, shut it down onto the P bass in sort of the middle position and have all those punk sounds or rock sounds. It's just a bass for every occasion. I actually think they work really well here. This is where they're great value for money as well, because they're so much less than a custom shop.
And you know, you think about all of these kind of ultra modern kind of session basses.
Yeah,
they are a lot of money.
Yeah,
you know,
and also these I tend to think they're like, they are very different to what the custom shop produce. You know, custom shop, if you get a custom shop bass, the likelihood is you're going to get like a 50s or 60s.
You're getting a white maple neck Strat, or you're getting...
Meant specifically on the basses. Because, you know, as far as I'm aware, custom shop could produce this for you. But they're not in the like custom shop showcase at NAMM usually.
Sure,
they're not generally going after the, here's your 9-volt preamp, you know, stuff. It'll be, here's a really good looking 60s jazz or whatever.
Yeah.
So yeah, these are cool. They just make sense on the bass.
Yeah, completely. And then, you know, likewise on the jazz bass, it's what you expect it to be. So block inlays, you've got the active passive.
When Fender do block inlays on a jazz, do they also move the bridge pickup to 70s position or is it 60s position?
I don't know the difference.
Oh. Okay. No, it's, I don't know, 2 centimeters, 3 centimeters less.
Oh, okay.
I think that's where all the tone is.
Because
where all the tone is.
It's in that 2 centimeter gap.
Yeah.
That's the real tone pocket.
Right. But I just wondered, because on 70s jazzes, they moved for a brief period, moved the bridge pickup down. They returned it after that, and all modern jazz basses.
Moved it down or moved what? So moved it back closer up to the bridge?
So in the 70s, it went closer to the bridge. In the 60s, and when it was first invented, it was
this looks
closer. And then since normal. the 70s, it's gone. It went back to the normal. It was only the 70s that they ever had it in that position.
Right.
But of course, the 70s is also the only time that had block inlays.
Gotcha.
As an age,
except for like reissues. Yeah, yeah,
exactly.
Course, yeah,
so I always wonder. It's like when you do blocks, do you also move the pickup?
No, I don't think so. Standard positioning.
And then the final instrument on the list is a 5-string.
Okay, and that brings us up to time on this week's episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. Matt, are you still with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, wonderful.
Good. I'm glad Matt's here, actually. I just want to jump in before you wind things up. I've got a very special quiz planned for the Patreon episode this week. So do stick around, Patreon. If you're not signed up already, you should join for this. So I'll just give you a quick overview and then we'll do the full rundown in the Patreon episode. The quiz is called Twanging on the Telephone. And what I've done is I've taken quotes from famous guitar movies, so movies that have guitars associated with them. I've taken the quote, I've translated it from English to Russian, Russian to Indonesian, Indonesian to Kazakh, Kazakh to Swedish, and then back to English. And you guys have to guess what film the quote is from.
I'm looking forward to this.
It's
going to be fun.
Very fun.
That sounds wonderful.
I mean, knowing that Google Translate it's like not often the most accurate of translation tools.
Some of
at
them.
At the best
what?
Of times.
Some of them are fine. Some of them, you're going to struggle. That's
okay.
All I'm saying.
Well, you can hear us guess at this absolute cack. Over on the Patreon.
We're very hard on this.
Yes, I know. For as little as $1, you can support the podcast. $1 a month gets you the regular episode ad-free and early. You can also join the Guitar Nerds live podcast from there. $5 a month gets you the Patreon episode and a load more. And $10 makes you an executive producer and gets your name sung in a song at the end of this episode, which is going to come in now. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Guitar Nerds. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/groups/Guitar Nerds Forum. And subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/Guitar Nerds. That's it for us this week. We'll be continuing over on the Patreon for more of this guitar nerdery. Farewell.
Cheers, gang.
Bye.
Brian Einstein, John Half, Gavin, Vander Linden, Jacob McGee, Christopher Franklin, Marcus Alcada, Wacky Rob, Buster, Stephen Burke, Robert Butterworth, Neil Milton, Maren Peters, Stuart Robson, Jeffrey Waxman, Christian Hansen, Zach Melton, Keith Adams, Stephen Ferguson, Eric File, Andy Joyce, John Anglin, Adam Moyes, Chris Jacob Moore, Rob Gould, Scott Hamilton, Tucker Ramadan, and Ernie Cooper, Ross Edwards, Nate, Nathan, Stephen Hens, Rob Grant, Matt Roberts, Dave Lee, and Emily James Baker, Juan Currier, Aaron Sherman, Blake Weiland, Andrew Good, Jamie Kemp, and Jake Gray, Matt Bellamy, Martin Cliff, Scott Kennedy, Christopher Lutz, Stephen Hansen, Robin Smith, Derek Rich, Chris Connors, Rob Nordvik with a V, Ed Bentley, Steve Merkel, Carlos Mancha, Andy McKenzie, Brad Page, Bletons, Scott O'Brien, Laurie Anstis, Paul Corrigan, Will Clare, Moog Gravett, Phil Thompson, Adrian Day, Ken Sayers, Matthew King, Scott Kane, Sean Arbo, and Christopher Robinson. Oh, oh, yes, this. Sing it to me, baby. What you listening to? Guitar nerds, yeah.